Hello, you're listening to the Cricket Special on 101.4 on FM. I'm Brendan Horgan. Coming up in this Cricket Special Hour, we have Peter Ackerley speaking to us live from the home of Cricket Lords. He's the ECB Head of Development. We also have Wayne Grieve from Last Man Stands Cricket. That's a new form of 2020 cricket for you guys out there. And Marcus Cordington Fernandez. He is the creator of the new Mongoose Cricket Bat. Plenty of coming up for you in the hour. But what we'll do, we'll start with Peter Ackerley, the head of development for cricket for the ECB. I went down to Lords, and for those of you out there who don't know, I asked Peter exactly what his role was as head of development of cricket for the ECB.
My particular role, I'm the head of the development of the game, so if you like, I'm charged with that responsibility of spreading the gospel, if you like, of the game and making sure that future generations of the game are inspired to become involved. And not just involved at a playing level, involved just at a, might be watching it, it might just be taking part in it, it might just be playing at any level, but essentially making sure that everyone's given an opportunity. And I suppose, if you like, the purpose of what I do is inspire the nation a little bit to choose cricket as opposed to any other sport, but more importantly to grow the game. Sustain the level of the game and make sure people have a really high quality experience at whatever engagement level they are, and create, if you like, pathways so people who do excel at the game can actually find themselves to play out there at Lords, you know, in a test match. But I suppose really encapsulating what I do is I create opportunities for people, I influence what other people can do in partnership with us, and help us promote the game. And it's not just about cricket doing it on its own or the ECB doing it on its own. I suppose another key part is to continuously improve everything we do all the time, so it gets better in whatever way we do things. And I suppose the most important thing I do is when I move on, I've left the game in a far better condition than I found it. And I think everybody in cricket is really now honour bound to, as a trustee of the game, to pass it on in a better condition. So leaving a legacy, I know legacy is quite a big thing now with Olympic legacies, but in terms of cricket, that's what we do. We actually create a legacy for people to carry on.
What kind of funding do you as the ECB get from the government, and how do you use this funding to improve cricket?
Several sources of funding, not just government funding. Oh, that's incredibly important. And recently this year we've announced the largest award of any sport from Sport England, and we're hugely indebted to working with Sport England, and they're one of those key partners we do work with, as well as other governmental departments as well. So £37.8 million, best part of, over 4 years, for us to work in all those areas that I've just talked about in terms of growing the game and sustaining it and excelling in the game. That's got to go a long way. And we've got a pound-for-pound match fund that. So it's about us finding money as well and us working with our key partners, a Chance to Shine charity, which is, if you like, really engendering interest in the game in state schools and really bringing cricket back into state schools. That's hugely important and a massive, massive focus of what we do. But importantly, linking those young people into local cricket clubs, and not just the cricket clubs that you and I would understand and see, the Ealing Cricket Club of this world, who do a phenomenal job locally, but the cricket clubs in, say, Stoke Newington, in inner city areas. It wouldn't be a traditional green field with a white picket fence around. It probably is a floodlit football pitch in inner London, but it's still a cricket club. It's still a place where young people come together and are coached and are inspired to take on the game. So, if you like, that's one of our big functions, our big money, but our our TV deals with Sky, hugely important, and as are all our key sponsorship deals. And one of the things that I think, I'm not sure we're unique as a governing body, but any of our large-scale sponsors have to also engage in a grassroots sponsorship as well. So they don't just get, if you like, their name on the England cricket shirt. They get engaged at a local and real grassroots level as well, which is great for us. And it really is, you know, if you like, taking our commercial a private enterprise into grassroots, matching that with public funding, and really making the public and private sector really work together.
So the sponsorship money does actually make its way down to these grassroots clubs, these smaller clubs, as you mentioned.
Yeah, absolutely. Not in terms of project specific, but in terms of funding that comes into ECB, it enables us through this, if you like, the Sky TV deal, plus our sponsors' money, enables me to have budget to work down at a local level to ensure that, if you like, some of this money that comes into the game at a high level filters down and gets into. And that's my job, if you like, to convince the board of the ECB to put more and more of that funding into as many grassroots projects as I possibly can. And if you like, that's one of my key parts of my job, is to really ensure that out of the game's total income, as much of that I can get my hands on, I get into grassroots. Because the game at grassroots level is probably 95-98% of what people play in this country. You know, the England team is absolutely the pinnacle of what we do. And without the England team, by the way, we wouldn't have a TV deal or a sponsorship. So it's hugely important that we get this balance between England's success on the field and profile to attract more and more sponsors, more and more income to the game, from then to then work at a grassroots level.
Okay, and do you have forms of assessment to check up with these clubs that they're using the money in the right way and that they are actually developing their clubs?
Yeah, I think that's what's really important. One of the things that I've tried to do in the last 4 years as head of development is to truly start to look at how do we operate the game as much more of a business, but that's not taking away it is a hugely enjoyable and a game that we want to promote. But to ensure that, if you like, I've got 39 county cricket boards out there from Middlesex, Essex, Surrey and Kent in the London area, but up to Durham and Cumbria, from Cornwall to East Anglia and to Wales, is that those cricket boards work against they're accountable locally and responsible locally, but they are accountable nationally to what they deliver. So if you like, I invest in county cricket boards to invest in the local clubs. Just over 8,000 cricket clubs in this country. I could not possibly invest in every one of them. So I've really got to get a focus on where we invest and where we're going to get the most sort of bangs for our bucks, if you like, and the biggest returns, and also investing in where we actually need to. And that's the real process we've gone through, is what is the bottom-up need of the game rather than what I perceive sat in here at Lords, what I think everybody needs. And by working at a local level, we really start to understand what local clubs need, or their coaches, or their volunteers, or their groundsmen. What is it they actually need at a local level? And that's when I then try and match that, you know, the resource to that need. And never going to keep everybody happy, but we'll try our best.
Recently, the women's team have been extremely successful, winning the Ashes series and the World Cup. And if I'm right, I've heard that no other country will actually play them in a test match apart from the Australia team. Is that correct?
Well, there's certainly a lot of people running scared from the England women's team right now, including most of the men's cricket in this country, because they're now at a pinnacle. And that hasn't come about by accident. That's come about by the England and Wales Cricket Board making a very conscious decision. It is the fastest growing part of our game. We grew at 49% participation last year in terms of women's and girls cricket. It's by far the fastest growing part of our game. It actually is quite important that we, again, by inspiring the nation, we don't just mean boys, we mean boys and girls, men and women. It's about making it fair and equitable to take part and given those opportunities. As you say, yeah, we hold the Ashes. They, at the moment, Australia are the only side that will play us in a test match. But I think that's now starting to change. But clearly, the shorter form versions of the game are more popular worldwide and it's easier to organise. But I think one of the things that we're really keen on is to make sure that we dominate in all aspects of the game. So as World 2020 champions, World Cup winners, and in terms of Test cricket, the Ashes, we've got a very strongly balanced side, and it's a very young side as well. So what we're now trying to make sure is that we create opportunities all over the country for all girls who want to come into the game, and they can get a chance and actually quite clearly see what they need to do to get into the England team. So we're committed to that in our next four-year plan. We'll be committed into women's and girls cricket. And
So is the same plan that you have for both men and women? There isn't a separate plan for the development of the male game or the female game?
There is separate plans, if you like, in terms of what we need to do, but clearly the overall view and the plan of what we want to do is a very similar player pathway. We need to get girls from the moment they become interested in the game, to ensure that they enjoy that, to ensure that they get a good experience. That's the same whether you're a boy or a girl, to ensure that you get a good experience at whatever age you are when you take up the game, and that you can progress at your level of ability And if you do have this gift and that you have a capability and you could go on and play for England, as soon as possible we get you on a fast track into the right area, the right club, the right regional squads, and giving you a real opportunity to excel. And I think that's where we've really become very good. We're spotting talent earlier and investing in that talent. And not just investing that talent just in the England team, but at the levels below that, at regional level and at local level as well.
Sport on FM.
The word legend gets banded around a lot in football, but Sir Bobby Robson was very much a legend.
Jack Charlton, 1966 World Cup winner, spoke exclusively to the Sports on FM team.
We worked together, we spent time together, and we discussed things together. And he was, always a smile on his face. I always considered him a good pal. I will miss him.
Check out the podcast
on fmradio.co.uk.
That was Peter Ackerley, the England and Wales Cricket Board Head of Development. We're going to come back to that interview a little bit later on, but after this quick music break, we've got Wayne Grieve from Last Man Stands. So join us after this quick music break.
Sitting in the morning sun, I'll be sitting when the evening comes, watching the ships roll in, and then I'll watch them roll away again. Yeah, I'm sitting on the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll away. Ooh, I'm just sitting on the dock of the bay, wasting time. I left my home in Georgia, headed for the Frisco Bay, 'cause I've had nothing to live for, and look like nothing's gonna come my way. So I'm just gonna sit on the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll away. I'm sitting on the dock of the bay, wasting time. Look like nothing's gonna change, everything still remains the same. Do what 10 people tell me to do, so I guess I'll remain the same. Listen, sitting here resting my bones, and this loneliness won't leave me alone. Listen, 2,000 miles I roam just to make this dock my home. Now I'm just gonna sit at the dock of a bay, watching the tide roll away. Ooh, I'm sitting on a dock of the bay, wasting time.
And you're listening to the Cricket Special on 101.4 on FM. I'm Brendan Horgan. I'm here in the studio with Wayne from Last Man Stands Cricket. Wayne, it's a new form of 2020 cricket. Could you tell our listeners what exactly is Last Man Stands?
Yeah, Last Man Stands is an 8-a-side version of 2020 cricket. We've got a few quirky rules to ensure the majority of players get value for time and money on the field. So with the advent of normal 2020 in 2005, we realised there was a need for guys who had work and social reasons why they couldn't play a full day of cricket to get out and have a quick 2-hour game. So we formulated a game that lasted 2 hours and still maintained a level of competitiveness, but at the same time ensured all players left the game feeling like they had participated in the outcome of the match.
So as opposed to normal 2020, there's less players on the pitch. That's right.
Yeah, there's only eight players. There's a restriction to field in zone. Each side of the field, you'd obviously have your bowler, wicketkeeper, and then three fielders on each side of the wicket.
Yeah. And there's a new rule in last man stands. Is it the last man stands rule?
The last man stands rule is our signatory rule. Basically, how it works is, in normal cricket, obviously, when the last wicket falls, the last batsman's left frustrated at the other end of the crease, and he also has to return to the pavilion. But with us, the last guy carries on batting on his own. So it creates a situation where he could be a hero and win the game for the team, but essentially there is a catch to it. He's not allowed to run a single. He has to hit a two, or he has to run two, hit a four, or hit a six. So he can't run one and get to the other end. So it can be quite humorous at the end of the innings when the final batsman, who's maybe could be fairly unfit and had a few beers on the side of the field, has to now try and get two runs to maybe win the match. Or
it's definitely a way to put the pressure on, isn't it?
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah.
So how and why did you come up with the idea for Last Man Stands?
The main reason, I was playing club cricket in London in 2004. And I mean, cricket's in my blood, so I've always enjoyed the game. But a lot of my mates, I realised, had stopped playing cricket, and not because they didn't enjoy the game, but purely because work and social reasons, and also wives and girlfriends and things like that, meant that they weren't able to go out and have a full game of cricket on the weekend. So purely, it was just, and then the same thing happened with me as I started getting older and work commitments. I was also started to feel the same. So it was purely also, it really came about because I felt there was a need for myself personally to have a different version of the game. So it started off quite socially with a few mates. A mate of mine I was at school with, we set up a mini league, and it just really took off from there.
So was it word of mouth that really exploded?
Yeah, it was word of mouth to start with. And then, yeah, pretty much most of it's been word of mouth. I mean, we've done the odd advertisement here and there, but one of the biggest features is every player in the team gets a world batting and bowling ranking, which obviously has good marketing background on that, because each player has a link with his profile, and they tend to send that on to their mates and look at my world batting ranking, and then obviously their mate hears about it and wants to enter a team in the league, you know.
So you can see just how good or just how bad you actually
are. Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Brilliant idea. So how many, as you said, it's kind of has developed through word of mouth, and it's developed, how many participants would you say participate in the Last Man Stands cricket now?
Yeah, in London we've got 5,000 registered players in about 250 teams. But since...
So 5,000, so it really has taken
off.
Yeah,
we started off with 20 teams in 2005 and pretty much doubled the amount of teams each year since then. So, and then in 2007 we took the concept to South Africa, and we've got about 100 teams in South Africa at the moment, and we've also sort of spread to Australia and New Zealand, and started leagues in Sydney, Melbourne, Christchurch, Wellington and Auckland.
So it's gone worldwide?
Yeah, worldwide. Yeah.
So it must be, for yourself, it must be a lot of work to kind of spread that message and try and...
Yes, it is a lot of work, but obviously we've got a lot of good guys that are passionate about cricket that have either taken franchises up or are running leagues themselves. So obviously we've got a good team, so it makes it a lot easier. But it's something I love doing, so it's, I think...
More of a passion.
More of a passion, yeah.
Yeah. So do these international leagues, would they would they govern themselves? Would they run their own leagues, or would that come back to the central yourself as...
Yeah, no, they run their own leagues, but we have got like an operations manual with procedures that need to be followed. But essentially, it's just like any cricket game, you know, it's a matter of arriving for the game. We provide the umpires, the ball, the stats on the website, the fixtures are on the website. So there's not really too much that can go wrong, but essentially it's just the guy on the ground's got to be passionate about it and ensure that all the captains are happy and things like that, yeah.
So you were saying that a lot of people, or the reason you set up, you don't necessarily have the time to play a full day of cricket, a test match or a 50-over match. What kind of people are you seeing coming along to Last Man Stands? Is it a young participation at all time?
We've seen a wide mix of people. Obviously in London, where we started Last Man Stands, there's a huge amount of, there's a lot of different nationalities living and working in London. So we've got players from India, Pakistan, Sri Lanka, South Africa, Australia, New Zealand, up north. We've even got some Scottish, we've got some Canadian players, guys from the Caribbean playing. And the age group sort of goes from about 18 to about 40, really. So it's a wide mix, and the skill levels also, it varies. You know, you get some guys that play good club cricket on the weekend that come down and play, not with eight strong players. You might get a guy who plays club cricket but sees Last Man Stands as a way to get other mates of theirs that maybe want to get into cricket but they're a bit more intimidated to get into cricket. That's going to be a sort of more of a competitive level. So
if there's a team out there now who want to get involved in Last Man Stands, they think they're up for the challenge and they think they're good enough, how do they get their team entered into one of the leagues?
Yeah, no, it's very easy. You just go to www.lastmanstands.com and you click on register your team or enter a team. There's a button on the website and it'll take you to the relevant city. In London, we've got quite a few different venues in London. We've got about 12 different venues in where the guys can choose from. And then once they've registered, one of us will give them a call and let them know when the next slot available is in the league. Obviously, it's coming to the end of the season now, but next year, April, we'll be starting up new leagues again, yeah.
So anyone interested in getting involved just has to go to the website?
Yeah, just go to the website, yeah.
So you mentioned just there that you've got 12 pitches in London.
Yeah.
It must be quite hard work getting the areas to play that many games of cricket.
Yes, it is a bit of a challenge, but a lot of our games are played on midweek, where in London, but prior to Last Man Stands, there wasn't a lot of midweek cricket played, mainly just due to the fact that it's quite a hassle for guys to get down after work, put stumps in the ground, get 11 guys, there's not enough time in the day. So due to that, there's quite a lot of availability midweek for cricket pitches. So we don't really have too much problems getting pitches. I think the councils are also needing more people to obviously hire their facilities and everything like that. So it's a win-win for everyone, yeah.
As we know, we're in a recession, so money's tight. How much does it cost to enter the league and play in the Last Man Stands League?
Yeah, it's the match fees are pretty much pay-as-you-go. So it's £80 per team per match, which works out to £10 a player. And with that, we provide the balls, the umpire. Every player gets stats after their games. They'll get a career average like the professionals do on Quick Info website. So you'll get all your personal details updated each week.
So you get an awful lot for your money.
Yeah, you get a lot for your money. I mean, a lot more than it might be a little bit more expensive than just going to play a social game in the park with your mates. But obviously, we have league tables. The fixtures are updated regularly, and it's just really hassle-free form of cricket. Yeah.
So, what kind of within these leagues do you have? Mini leagues? Do you have cups? What if you're going to get involved? What kind of competitions will you? What forms of competitions?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on really the team. We've got different divisions, which obviously would cater for different skill level, different teams with different skill levels. So, it really, when the teams come in and want to enter, we'll get a feeling from them of how strong the team is. What are they looking for? Are they looking to play some competitive cricket, or are they just really there to have a hit around and a beer afterwards? So we get a feel for the level of competition for what the guys are wanting to play. So, I mean, we've got some really, really strong teams, and on the other end of the scale, we've got some really, really social sides that are very good in the pub after the game, you know.
So it's also open for those teams. You aren't necessarily looking to win everything,
yes,
but just
for sure,
looking for a good day out.
Yeah, in fact, it's more open to that. That's what the concept on the whole is really just to get as many people playing cricket. Obviously, what we found is because there is a slight competitive element to it is what makes the guys more keen. You know, if you're just having a social game in the park and there's no meaning to it, then the guys lose interest. So whenever we've tried to come up with clever league structures that allow more games to mean something as opposed to having a lot of dead rubbers and one-sided results. So you could have two teams that have just started playing cricket, but because they're quite evenly matched, that's their test match out there, and they take it very seriously, and it means everything to them.
Do you have any women taking part in Last Man Stands cricket?
Last year we did market open up to a ladies league, and we ran a small league of four teams. But to be honest, it is an area that we're looking to grow. It's just we haven't been able to hit that nail on the head just yet. But in 2010, it's definitely a big target area for us. But we're going to obviously need to work with cricket boards and lady cricket unions to see how we can get more women involved. We do feel it's the perfect game to develop women's cricket. It's just a matter of getting the support from maybe cricket unions and the ECB with regards to helping us develop that. Yeah,
I've heard it's actually the fastest developing part of the game in England in cricket is the women's game. Obviously, with the success of the England's women's team, hopefully something like that will encourage more women and girls to get involved in something like Last Man Stands.
Yeah.
Finally, just you've mentioned it before, but if anyone wants to find any information about Last Man Stands or get involved, where can they go?
Yeah, www.lastmanstands.com, and then if you're in London, you click on the England page and then click on London City, and all the information you need to know is on the website.
Brilliant. Well, Wayne, thanks very much for coming in and speaking on the cricket special for On FM.
Yeah, no, thanks. It's been great. It's great to be here. Thanks.
Listen here, and this is what he cried. On my feet I wear two shoes for dancing, dancing to be free. On my feet they're paying tribute to the Bobby Marley legacy. On my knees they got some cuts and bruises from my skating all my days. Cause when I skating with my friends, my troubles drift away. I say my legs they're wearing baggy pants. I like to move around cause getting down and jumping out, these are some good things that I found. Got a slinky belt with a clip that's quick to open, because the loving is the sweetest thing, and up from my waist it happens. And my stomach's got some tasty food that's making me feel good, cause sharing some meals is something I wish the world could do. Well, my chest it wears a singlet, while my chest it beating proud. All my chest suggests I am a man that no institutions can knock down. And around my neck is superstition hanging from a chain, because I got my gods, but in the end, I make my own way.
The cricket special on 101.4 on FM. I'm Brendan Horgan, and earlier on we had a bit of an interview at Lord's with the head of development, Peter Ackerley, of the ECB, and We're going to go to the second part of that interview, and basically what I was asking Peter was, I was asking what exactly are the ECB development side doing to get cricket to inner city kids and kids who might not necessarily have access to a cricket pitch, and this is what Peter had to say.
I think the main important thing about my job is really to make cricket as accessible as possible, and accessible at a local level. Some of the work we've been doing through Empower, our Test Match Series sponsor, it's called Urban Cricket, and urban cricket is essentially cricket in urban areas. But what that does, it's really just giving equipment out locally, so it's bats and balls. We have invested in some facilities, which are basically multi-use games areas, for want of a better phrase. They're really a focal point of the community, one in Brixton that we've built, and we're expanding that around the country as well into five other areas. But these are multi-use games areas, they're cricket specific, they've got cricket markings on them, and we want the local community to own those. So we've got local coaches working on them, the local youth workers are working on them, so the local community actually playing cricket. And the version of cricket they play is their version. We don't tell them what to play or how to play it. And if you like, I've always liked to think that urban cricket in our inner city programs are almost, it's the equivalent for cricket of our jumpers for goalposts. Yeah. Here's a bat and a ball. Get on and play with what you like. As long as you're having a great time and you're energized and you're inspired to watch your heroes and chase your heroes, that's what we're trying to do. And we're not trying to force them into a very traditional route. What we will do is look for talent. Because there's no doubt whatsoever that there's a huge amount of talent locked in our inner cities whose opportunity is probably not as great as, you know, if you're in a leafy suburb in northwest London. And I think what we have to try and make sure we do is not be blocked by the cost of developing cricket in the cities. Without a doubt, it's infinitely more expensive to develop cricket in an inner city area, but we're not fazed by that challenge. And we're very, very committed now to working with different communities, working with different partners, and understanding that the England and Wales Cricket Board is not just going to walk out of Lord's Cricket Ground with a bag over its shoulder and be able to walk into some of these communities really quite easily. We're not. What we have to ensure and understand is what do those communities actually need? And we'll work with those communities to ensure and find what is the best experience they can have by training the right coaches, by training the right people to work in and with those communities and give those communities that opportunity and create that opportunity in a community, a really local level, down to the work we do with a charity called Cricket for Change in London. They work really, really closely with us and really do some phenomenal work on the real inner city housing estates. They get down to, this is really local, almost a neighbourhood only, and they work with there and they develop these young cricketers. They play against each other, so if you like, the competition they have with each other is a cricket match, nothing else. If they're playing cricket, and that's really useful. And we're trying to, address those agendas locally through making sure that we're trying to address the change for cricket. We're not trying to be social engineers in any shape or form. We're just trying to give young people what they want in their local area, give them something to do, but give them something with a purpose to do. And I think cricket can be that purpose.
Do the ECB have any links with schools or programs that they offer to schools for PE lessons? I myself, when I went to school, it was a while ago now, but I remember it, in essence, cricket lessons would be, they put the stumps out, they gave us a ball and a bat and said, get on with it. Basically, there was no training or anything really involved. Are there initiatives with schools now that...
Our process and our programs through A Chance to Shine, we're making a massive investment. We're looking for that investment to be matched pound for pound by government, and over the next, we're 3 or 4 years into this program now. It's a 10-year program. We're looking to raise £50 million to invest in state schools to really bring cricket back into, and not just an odd game of cricket, but a program of understanding the game, training, and inspiring again through teachers being trained, coaches being trained to work in schools. It's a very different environment working in a school than it is in your local cricket club. So getting the right people, doing the right things at the right time with these young people, again, to inspire them from a primary school to get their first energy about the game, to then take it into their secondary schools. If you like, that link between primary and secondary school is absolutely vital. If you don't get that link right, you lose an awful lot. In addition to that, our Quick Cricket programme, which starts in primary schools, this year we're just over 14,500 teams took part nationally in that. It's one of the biggest primary school competitions in the country. So what we've really now started to get is a real understanding of what teachers really require and a lot of it is support and guidance and help. And again, through Chance to Shine and our own investment programs, we're now trying to add value to teachers. So, if you like, help them to help themselves in teaching. And the rewards are already showing with a 24% increase in participation last year.
With the new and different forms of cricket coming up, obviously you've got 2020 and there's all kind of different initiatives out there. What kind of training are the kids getting? Are they getting trained to focus on 2020, or is Test cricket the aim? As development of the ECB, what would you say is you would ideally see these kids getting trained in what areas?
I think quite simply, cricket is about doing the really simple things well, whether you're batting, bowling or fielding. If you can focus and get young people to do the real basics of the game really highly effectively at a young age, it doesn't matter which game they play, whether they play 2020 or Test cricket. If we just get, and this is not only just working with cricket skills, this is going way before we start cricket skills. This is getting basic fundamental movement skills. And again, part of our programmes are working in primary schools and working in clubs with youngsters as young as, you know, as 5, 6, 7. Just really giving them that real understanding of movement, of agility and balance and speed and quickness, and making sure that they've actually got some real understanding of how they move, their hand-eye coordination, and really bringing those skills, then really giving them the real fundamentals of the game in their skill sets. And once you've got a young player, you know, who can do the real simple, you know, the real basic things simply and do them highly effectively, it doesn't really matter whether he's playing 2020 or Test cricket, he will then be able to take all the innovation and manipulate his skills in those games. But don't forget, 2020 that we all now know and love and extol its virtues is actually what the club game's been playing and youngsters have been playing for years and years and years. 20 over cricket was born in our local cricket clubs and our schools. So actually all we're now doing is getting the, if you like, the high profile big name players to play what we've been playing in our grassroots cricket for 30, 40, 50 years.
You also, I read there is a Cricket Factory roadshow tour going on. And what exactly is the Cricket Factory Roadshow Tour?
The ECB Cricket Factory is really one part of how we, if you like, trying to inspire the nation. This is taking the game out to different aspects and different marketplaces. It goes from local shopping centres to beaches to local towns to cricket matches to different environments, and really starts to progress. And it's there to invite people into the game, people who would not ordinarily attend a cricket match, but they will see it in their local shopping centre or on the beach in the summer. It's just very much about putting the Cricket Factory in different environments and promoting the game as much as anything. But again, it's a skill-based arena. It's getting young people, and we've had huge success with people who would never have played the game before. People, you know, children with special needs, who would have all in the past been hesitant to get involved in a sporting environment, being drawn in and being invited in and being feeling very welcome and able to do the skills and realise that whether they have an ability or a disability, they can play this game. And we're using that very much in many, many different environments to really encourage young people, families, parents, grandparents. And, you know, I think last year on the beach tour we had an 85-year-old bloke who waited all day for the children to disappear and then waited at the end for his go, and he didn't want anybody else to be around. But he was inspired to, he just wanted to have a go. And that's very much about taking, the Cricket Factory is very much a part of our long-term strategy to take the game to different areas, but as a promotional tool and an engagement tool with young people and all different aspects of society to ensure and show that anybody can play this game.
So what kind of activities would we be doing at the Cricket Factory?
Quite simply, just the real basics of the game, you know, throwing, catching, striking a ball, bowling a ball, and it literally is target-based, and there's scores, you know, that you get, and it's just to encourage you to keep getting better and better at what you do. But they're very much games, and you learn through playing games, so you're not cricket per se, it's just playing different games. There's rebound nets for reflex, there's a who can throw the ball the fastest against a speed gun. There's a cricket batting game where you hit the ball into spaces and against targets. And it's just very simple activity that what a child and anybody who takes part is doing is very quickly acquiring some very basic skills of the game, but in a fun and not a challenging environment, and realising that what they're doing while they're doing that is undertaking some pretty taxing skills of the game, but they're doing it in a really fun and enjoyable way. And it's our, again, that's looking to engage with our England cricket team down to our young people. So we use that as we get the England team who go out and go on different parts of the roadshow. Our county cricket clubs use it as a recruitment tool for new members. And again, it's really flexible operation, and it can fit just about anywhere.
It does sound like a great way to kind of get young kids, mainly girls who, you know, aren't interested in cricket, yeah, into just getting involved in those kind of activities.
I think it's all about taking barriers away. I think quite often cricket is perceived to be, by some people, you know, oh, I can't access that game. And again, everything we're doing now is about creating that opportunity for all. And that's very simply, that's the biggest message I can give, is making sure that I can basically get a lot of young people from a playground ultimately to a test arena. But if they don't actually make that test arena, on the way there's something that they can do and there's a level at which they can play. And I'm really just about inspiring the nation to choose cricket.
There is the one game pledge. Could you tell us a little bit about the one game pledge?
Yeah, one game is really literally what we are. We are one game. Yeah, we welcome, celebrate and embrace everybody into the game. But it's very much about not just signing to say, yes, I think the game's inclusive and I think everybody should be given an opportunity to play the game, whether you're black or white, whether you're male or female, whether you come from a rich part of town or a poor part of town. One game is much, much more than that. It's about everybody wanting to get involved in the game, whether you play professionally, whether you play very seriously at club level, whether you play in your local school team, whether you don't play in your local school team, but you just play on the park or the beach with your mates. It's absolutely about being one game. And the one game pledge is really getting people to not just sign a, yes, I support that as a philosophy, it's very nice, but actually say, well, so what are you going to do about it? What are you going to do tomorrow as part of our one game pledge? And I just challenge everybody now, you know, what are you going to go out and do tomorrow that will help either yourself or someone else become involved in the game in some way, shape or form? We've had the pledge signed by tea ladies in Gloucestershire, we've had the one by six-year-old girls in the Westfield Centre in London, and again, the game is about, well, what are you going to do tomorrow? And our winner at the Westfield Centre, the winner of our prize draw, Emily, was a seven-year-old girl who said, well, I'm going to start playing cricket tomorrow because I'm sick of watching my brother play. And that's the sort of thing that we want this to happen. It's about, what are you going to do tomorrow?
Brilliant. Well, we at the OnFM sports team definitely support the one game pledge in we'll be pledging to promote cricket as best as we can on our sports show.
Thank you.
So that was Peter Ackerley at the ECB Head of Development speaking to us from Lourdes. We've got Marcus Cordington Fernandez coming up after the break, the creator of the Mongoose cricket bat. So stay tuned, and Marcus will be with us after this quick music break.
Another turning point, a fork stuck in the road. Time grabs you by the wrist, directs you where to go. So make the best of this test and don't ask why. It's not a question but a lesson learned in time. It's something unpredictable, but in the end is right. I hope you had the time of your life. So take the photographs and still frames in your mind, hanging on a shelf in good health and good time. Tattoos and memories and dead skin on trial. For what it's worth, it was worth all the while. It's something unpredictable, but in the end it's right. I hope you had the time of your life. It's something
for.
If you want your ads or sponsorship messages to reach our listeners, visit our website at www.onfmradio.co.uk or email us at info@onfmradio.co.uk.
Hi and welcome back to the cricket special on the OnFM Sports Show. I'm here with Marcus Cordington Fernandez, who's the creator of the Mongoose Cricket Bat. It's a new cricket bat which is designed for 2020 cricket, and he's here to tell us a bit about the bat. But first off, Marcus, could you tell us a bit about your history and your background and before you came up with the bat and how you ended up coming up with the bat?
Sure. Well, the first thing to say is I'm not from cricket. I don't have a cricket background, although I'm a cricket freak and I play all the time and I've always been obsessed with it. I didn't work in cricket, and the reason I came up with a bat, I think, is that I didn't work in cricket, and you can only have these ideas when you're on the outside. You wouldn't have been able to do it from the inside, if you like. My background was branding. I made brands for a living, is what I used to do. So some use to that, in that we've been creating the brand that is Mongoose, I suppose. But the idea was I wanted to get out of branding. I'd done it for a long time, and it would have been fine as a way of making a living. But I wasn't as happy as I might have been, and I wanted to do what I wanted to do and follow my passion. So I came up with an idea for a cricket bat and thought this might yet work. So I've spent the last 2 years developing it, and without any money coming in, it has to be said, so I'm as poor as a church mouse. But I'm happy, poor and happy. Mongoose has launched a couple of months ago, and it seems to be doing okay.
So what exactly are the differences between the Mongoose bat and a traditional cricket bat?
Well, the big difference is that the Mongoose bat is a different dimension. And it's a different dimension because it's designed for the shorter version of the game, 2020. The idea being, in 2020, you don't defend the ball, you just attack. So this is a bat that has a different length blade to a conventional bat. So what we worked out was, at the top, a cricket bat is a couple of feet long, but the top 9 inches of it don't really work if you're trying to hit the ball and get score runs. It's fine for defending the ball, so if you've got a ball up by your throat, you know, you might use the top of the bat for defending it, but it will never score you a run because it's got a splice in it, and the splice is the thing that joins the handle and the blade, and when a ball hits it, it just, nothing happens. The ball just acts like a pancake and just drops at your feet. So fine if you're playing defensive games, but in 2020 you attack every ball. Every ball has to go. There are only 120 balls delivered in the innings, so everyone's got to go. So I took off that top of the bat and made the whole of the bat a sweet spot and got rid of the splice, put the splice in the handle. So wherever you hit the ball on that blade, it can go for six. I mean, it really does fly along.
So what are the kind of differences you've seen in players in their attacking game, the differences in of shots, distances that they're hitting the ball?
Yes, good question. I think the thing about it is that, firstly, it gives players confidence to get after the ball. And they reckon that when you get bat on ball, it goes. And we did a good thing last year, which was we put the bat into testing at Imperial College London, their biomechanical engineering department, and they... A couple of boffins looked at it for 3 months and did a lot of tests on, you know, all the sort of scientific stuff of percussion and, you know, durability and flexibility and all these things. What came out of it was that the bat hits the ball 20% harder than a normal ball, than a normal bat does. So
20% is a fair, 20% is a fair is a amount. Long way. Yeah.
So 20% means that where you might have chipped one up and got caught near the boundary, you're in row T now. You know, it goes a lot further.
And
when you play with it, you really feel it. I mean, it does come off a lot quicker. And, you know, every player who uses it does the same thing. They pick it up, have a couple of swings in the nets. Don't get used to the timing, because the reason it hits the ball harder is it swings through the air quicker. It's got faster bat speed. So that is very noticeable also. So you mistime a couple, and then generally the third ball, every batsman hits out the ground for six, and they look at this thing and go, blimey, this works.
So it doesn't take too much adjustment from the player?
Well, I hope not. It doesn't seem to. We haven't found that it does with most players. But frankly, it's a mental thing. You've got to get your head around the fact that you're playing with a bat that looks 33% shorter than a conventional bat, or at least the blade is. The handle's long, so the overall length of the bat is the same as a normal bat, but the blade is the thing that's shorter, which means you've got a long handle and a short blade. So if you don't look down is what we say, everything's fine. If you look down, yeah, you're in trouble.
As you said, you've brought one into the studio for us here, and I'm looking at it now, and for someone who isn't necessarily any good at cricket at all, you'd have to be a fairly brave batsman to use the mongoose maybe in the professional game. Would that be
We've got some good players. The first player we signed up was Stuart Law, the Aussie international, who is as good a cricketer as this country's ever seen. He's hit averages 51. He's complete class. And he picked it up, and he had the same reservations that everybody has ever had about this bat. You look at it and think, can't work. And then you get it in the nets, and he did the same thing. I think it was the first ball. He nearly killed the bloke who threw it at him. I mean, literally nearly killed him. And you saw Stewie look down at the bat and go, yes, this thing works. Stuart Law yesterday, who incidentally picked up his Australian OBE from Buckingham Palace. So he's a good player. He's a proper player.
So do you have any other pros on at all?
Yeah, we're just signing up players now. We've just signed the West Indies international Dwayne Smith. And Dwayne plays for Sussex and for the Deccan Chargers in India, and is an amazing hitter of a cricket ball. He absolutely murders it. We've also got a chap called Lou Vincent, who's a New Zealander, a New Zealand international, scored 100 on debut at the Wacker against Australia, against the classic Australian side of Warner, McGrath and co. So he's only 29, and he's a fantastic player, and will be back playing top-grade international cricket in the next year or two. And is an amazing cricketer. So we're doing well, and we're now looking to sign up other players. We're in negotiation with some of the top players in the world, literally sort of top five players, who we hope we can sign up. And so it's very exciting. We get to go and mess around with top cricketers and see them hit the ball around.
Yeah. So it's the cricket bat's designed for 2020 cricket. You were saying there that a lot of the pros, including Stuart Law, seem to get very well comfortably with it. What about the grassroots level players, the players who maybe play at the smaller clubs? How would they find the adjustment as harder, or is it suitable for a grassroots player?
We've found that it suits players who don't expect it to suit more than it suits the top players. You kind of know that Kevin Peterson's going to be able to hit the ball out of the ground with a stick of rhubarb. You know, he can do it with absolutely anything. And with our bat, he might hit it 20% further, but it was going out of the ground anyway, so it doesn't make all that much difference. The thing that we've found is that the players who you don't expect are the ones that really prove this bat works, and particularly to us in a way. Players who generally don't score many runs can come in and hit balls like they've never hit the ball. It really does hit the ball a lot harder. So they are able to play shots where before they wouldn't have done. So this is definitely a grassroots bat. I mean, no question about it.
And is the feedback the same from the grassroots players who you've seen? It doesn't take as long as they would have perceived to get used to the club.
Yeah, I think so. And I certainly hope so. What we've found is that players who try and hit the ball too hard with a mongoose aren't going to score many runs. It's the players who just play their normal game, play proper cricket shots, don't try and hit it too hard, try and play as technically correct as they can do. And that bat seems to suit them better because, as I say, if you play the same shot that used to get you two, it now gets you four. And that's much more encouraging for a batsman. So confidence level raises, they feel better about themselves, play more expensive shots, but don't try and hit the ball too hard.
Yeah. So why exactly did you call it the mongoose?
Yeah, the mongoose is a funny word, isn't it? It's got too many O's in. I think the reason for calling it a mongoose was that we were looking for a way of describing the bat that described its capabilities. And a mongoose is an animal, and it's most obviously in India where this thing lives. And what it's used for is if you've got a problem with a snake. So if you've got a cobra problem in your house, what you do is you get a mongoose, you put the mongoose in the same space, you know, in the kitchen, if that's where the snake is, and 1 minute later, you've no longer got a snake problem. And what happens is the mongoose looks like a nice cuddly chap, and he sort of wanders around the snake, and he's sort of seemingly minding his own business, picking his nose and stuff. I mean, on YouTube you can watch pretty gruesome footage of this stuff, and nothing seems to happen. The snake is sort of minding his own business, as is the mongoose, and then before you can see it, the mongoose has taken the snake's head off. I mean, it is completely ferocious. But the reason we called it the bat a mongoose is that this is a small creature. It's small, it looks nice enough, it looks cuddly, but it's an absolute vicious little chap, and it sorts out problems that you don't expect. It's also the underdog. You don't expect it to go in and do the terrible things that it does to snakes, but it always does.
So forget the O's. It's an absolutely perfect name for the bat, isn't
well,
it?
Well, it does sum it up. I mean, it is small, but it's ferocious. I mean, you know, it certainly does. It does what it says on the tin, that's for sure.
So I've got one final question for you for yourself as the creator of the bat. Are there any new bats in the pipeline? Maybe a test version of the mongoose, or a slightly different version for the different styles of cricket?
Yes, good. We have got a long blade bat, which is a test match bat, and called the COR. And the reason we've got that is that when you sponsor top players, they've got to be able to play test match as well as 2020, for instance. So this is a bat which is a bit shorter in the blade than a normal bat, but it doesn't have a splice in it again. And again, that area of the splice which kills the ball doesn't kill the ball in our bat, so we've increased the sweet spot on that. But it mostly looks like a conventional bat, but it doesn't play like one. I have to say, they're really, really good cricket bats in a conventional sense, so we're pretty thrilled with it. And the top pros are really enjoying it. So we've got that at the moment. We're also looking to bring out some new products. We've got some pads designed with Stuart Law for next year, which have got new technology on, which will be as radical as the bat, and gloves that do the same thing. So we're looking to invent new products for all of cricket that follow the sense of excitement that the mongoose bat has created by doing something completely different. So we're going to do that with a ball. We've got an idea for that. We've got an idea for clothing. So I hope we're going to bring lots of new products out in the coming years.
Brilliant. So where can our listeners find more information about the Mongoose Bat and the Mongoose Company?
Well, Mongoose is an online company. We sell in retailers. You can find us at Lord's. You can find us at the Oval in most of the big cricket shops. But the best place to go and see the bat being used is online at mongoosecricket.com, because at mongoosecricket.com we've got Stuart Law on the front page whacking balls around, and you can see the thing being used, and it's a good way to see that you play proper cricket shots with this bat. The bat does look a bit different, but the way it's used is completely conventional, except it gets you more value for your runs, for your shots. So mongoosecricket.com is a good start, but otherwise go into, say, the Lord's shop, pick it up, have a swing, see what you think.
Brilliant. Well, thanks very much for taking your time out to speak to the OnFM sports team.
This is the OnFM Sports Show.
This is the cricket special on the OnFM Sports Show is what it is. And Peter, who was in a little bit earlier on from Mongoose Cricket Bat, has actually said that he was going to donate a Mongoose Cricket Bat to the sports show and to this cricket special. And he recorded a question. So for anyone out there who wants to enter our competition and win yourself a Mongoose Cricket Bat, listen to this question and I'll tell you how you can enter after you've heard the question. It's a simple question if you listen to the interview closely.
What sort of snake is a mongoose most commonly associated with? What kind of snake is a mongoose most commonly associated with?
So that was, what kind of snake is a mongoose most commonly associated with? And anyone who knows your answer, all you have to do is email into us at sport@onfmradio.co.uk with the correct answer, your name and an address where we can send the bat to you. And yeah, you could have yourself a mongoose cricket bat. So yeah, once again, if you email into sport@onfmradio.co.uk with the title cricket competition with your answers, names and addresses, and we're going to be having a draw in a few weeks on the sports show. So tune in to the sports show to find out if you've won yourself a mongoose cricket bat. Thanks again to Peter Ackerley of the ECB, Wayne Greaves of Last Man Stands Cricket, and of course Marcus Cordington-Fernandez from Mongoose Cricket Bat. Be sure to tune into the sports show every Thursday night at 6 o'clock. This is me, Brendan Horgan, signing off. for the cricket special with there's only one song you can really finish a cricket special with, isn't there?
Trucking right, I heard a dark voice beside of me, and I looked round in a state of fright. I saw four faces, one man, a brother from the gutter. They looked me up and down a bit and turned to each other.